Support for this podcast comes from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative, connecting communities with the resources, infrastructure, and networks to ensure a vibrant local free press.
From KVPR in Fresno, this is Central Valley Daily. It's Wednesday, December 3rd. I'm Elizabeth Arcalian. The immigration crackdown across the country is having real impacts on the ground, even in places largely untouched by enforcement actions.
What we found this year in both Fireball and in Chowchilla is that tax receipts were down significantly in the second quarter of this year.
And farmers say they are also footing much of the pain. We've got a conversation with a journalist who set out to examine the effects. But first, these headlines. An analysis from the Associated Press says that 81 people have died in the U.S. this year in mass killings. The latest toll came from a shooting at a children's birthday party this past weekend in Stockton. That was the country's 17th mass killing so far this year, though the death toll so far is lower than last year, which ended with 165 deaths and at least 38 mass killings. Nearly 44% of the country's programs that certify truck drivers may be forced to close. This follows a review by the Federal Transportation Department that found that trucking schools may not be complying with government requirements. Haya Panjawani with the Associated Press has this report.
The Transportation Department said that it plans to revoke the accreditation of nearly 3,000 schools unless they can comply with training requirements in the next 30 days. Separately, the Department of Homeland Security is auditing trucking firms owned by immigrants to verify their drivers are qualified to hold a commercial license. Another 45,000 schools are being warned that they could face similar action. This crackdown on trucking schools and companies is the latest step in the government's effort to ensure truck drivers are qualified and eligible to hold a commercial license.
That was Haya Panjawani with the Associated Press. An immigrant advocacy organization in Northern California is warning that Afghan immigrants could see an uptick in targeted enforcement. That's after seven Afghan immigrants, some seeking asylum, were detained at the Icefield office in Sacramento this week. Giselle Garcia is with NorCal Resist, which organizes volunteers to monitor immigration courts and offices in Sacramento.
We have not seen seven arrests in one day, and all targeted to one specific ethnicity since we've been in the courthouse. The first arrest happened at the immigration building in, on May 22nd, and we've been in that building every day since May 23rd.
Sacramento is home to the nation's largest population of Afghan immigrants. A new poll released this week suggests a majority of Asian American and Pacific Islander voters in California disapprove of the direction that the state is going. Lori Fitzgerald with our newsroom partner Capital Public Radio has more.
The poll found that 53% of likely AAPI voters in California believe the state is off on the wrong track. Two-thirds see cost of living as an extremely serious problem. Jay Chang, an Asian American political strategist in California, independently commissioned the poll.
Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders want the next governor to focus on state issues and fixing California and issues around affordability that they see. They don't want a governor that is just fighting national political battles.
67% of AAPI voters say they want a governor who will focus more on California than the Trump administration. Chang also leads Neighbors for a Better San Francisco, a centrist political group that advocates for more moderate candidates and policies. He says the poll will inform ways to organize the AAPI community, which makes up 12% of likely voters in California. It's the fastest growing group of voters. A follow-up poll will be conducted in February. In Sacramento, I'm Laura Fitzgerald.
A rock climber recently finished a marathon ascent of a long stretch of Yosemite's El Capitan Rock. Sasha DeJulian completed the climb along the so-called Platinum Wall in 23 days. She camped out on the rock face and persevered through rain and ice storms. DeJulian is a world-renowned climber from Colorado, and she told news outlets this climb is her proudest one yet. The route she took is believed to have been climbed by only three other climbers.
A long year of news is coming to a close.
Worldwide tariffs that President Trump ordered.
Cardinals elected an American as Pope.
United States bombed Iran's three most important nuclear sites overnight.
The beginning of the end for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
The government has officially shut down.
Before next year's midterms.
Until next year.
I'm Corva Coleman. Support the station that's here for you all year round. Here's how to give.
Donate now at kvpr.org or on the KVPR app.
And now to our main story. President Donald Trump's mass deportation campaign during his second term in office has reached major cities like Los Angeles, Chicago, and most recently, Charlotte, North Carolina. According to data by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, as of mid-November, more than 65,000 people were being held in immigration custody. That's the highest level ever reported by the agency. Hearing about immigration enforcement has left many in smaller and more rural parts of the country living and waiting in fear. That's the case for many immigrants without legal status in the San Joaquin Valley. Nigel Duara is a reporter with our news partner Cal Matters, and he recently reported on how the fear of potential immigration actions coming here has changed the dynamic in the Fresno County towns of Firebaugh and Chowchilla. Specifically, the immigration fears have changed how people go about their daily lives and even how they spend money, which generates local tax revenue. On his reporting trip, Nigel also spoke with farmers to understand why some struggle to find workers with legal status. To discuss all this, Nigel spoke with Central Valley Daily producer Jonathan Linden. He begins by discussing what it looks like on the ground in some of these small farming towns.
So on the west side of Fresno County, you know, you have a lot of these smaller towns that, you know, really without the need for trucks and moving agricultural goods, there really wouldn't probably be a town there. So these towns are kind of like, I analogize them to almost East Coast beach towns. In the summer, they double in size. A town like Firebaugh goes from 4,000 people to 8,000 people. That's when they really make their money. In the second and third quarters of the year, that's when people are going out shopping. They're going out to eat, you know, they're putting tax receipts into the city of Firebaugh. But what we found this year in both Firebaugh and in Chowchilla is that tax receipts were down significantly in the second quarter of this year, which would be from April until the end of June. They were down about 30% in both places, which indicates that these towns are going to have to make some tough decisions with their money in the coming budget cycle. That could be with the police, that could be with the parks, that could be with the senior center. But from talking to city officials, that's what they're looking at now.
Yeah, you actually spoke with the city manager of Firebaugh. What were some of the things that he told you?
Well, he certainly acknowledged that people are afraid. And that has been, I would say, the theme of our coverage this year, you know, whether it's at courthouses or it's in the fields and the farms, or if it's in the garment factory in downtown LA, there is this pervasive sort of sense of fear. That fear may not really affect a place like Los Angeles, which is so big, but in a place like Firebaugh, where you're really dependent on the people who are afraid to get out there and shop and spend and you know, really sustain this place, they're feeling the impacts.
The federal government even appears to be recognizing that losing farm workers could be a major loss for our food supply. Could you talk about a recent report published by the Department of Labor?
Sure. And, you know, this was quietly put out in the Federal Register in October. It didn't get a ton of coverage. But what it said was that because the inflow of undocumented workers has basically been ground to a halt, right? And then there's not a lot of people in the United States that want to work, the domestic food production is in trouble. And so this obviously comes from a federal government that is aiding this situation, you know, to happen. But what this notice says is that's going to have consequences very, very soon if they don't ramp up the number of people available to work. So the suggestion here is that they pay more H-2A workers and they get more H-2A workers to come in here. H-2A, again, is a visa available to foreign nationals for temporary residents in the United States to work agricultural jobs.
Many listeners may be wondering why workers without legal status are so common in agriculture. You talked with farmer Joe Del Bosque. He operates Del Bosque Farms in Firebaugh. Can you tell us a little bit more about that conversation that you had with Joe?
Sure. So I asked Joe, so why not just hire H-2A workers? Why not just pay for the H-2A program? And he said, sure. You know, I tried that. And what he said happened was that, first of all, he has to pay them $3 more an hour than he would any other employee or the undocumented folks that he employs. He had to pay for their transportation to and from his farm. He has to pay for the food that they eat. So it becomes, at least according to him, economically unviable. So then I said, okay, well, what about locals? And he kind of laughed. And he said, sure, they'll come out for a couple of days or a week. But when that day is over, that week is over, and they've been bending and lifting and bending and lifting for hours in a day, they do not come back. And so his option, and the folks who do come back and who stick around and are pretty good at this job, are by and large undocumented folks.
And in keeping with this H-2A visa topic, even if a farmer did want to take that route, how hard is it to get an H-2A visa? Is there only a certain number that are available out there?
There's not a limit on H-2As. The question is if you're willing to economically invest in it and who's available to come through. So with this new notice in the Federal Register, maybe there could be more streamlining. I know that on October 2nd, they said they were going to streamline H-2As a little bit more. But, you know, it still has to be, the requirement still has to be for an H-2A visa that there's not sufficient workers who are able, willing, and qualified to do the job. So that does appear to be the case right now in a lot of California agriculture. And again, if it's a problem in California agriculture, it's a problem for the rest of the country and the rest of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did also want to note something that struck me about your conversation with farmer Joe Del Bosque. He talked about how the crop a farmer grows potentially appears to affect a farmer's politics. Can you talk about what he meant by that?
Sure. And we were joking around a little bit, but this really does fall down to a kind of a historical materialist analysis, right? What this comes down to is saying that what you grow defines your politics. So there's a line on his property. Okay. On one side is his melon farm. On the other side is an almond farm. And the almond farm has a big Trump sign right out front. And I asked him, you know, what is with that? How, you know, you're supporting the stuff and your neighbor is not. And he said, well, it's pretty easy. I need a lot of people. I need a lot of people to lift the melons and put them in the back of the harvester, drive the tractor and box them and all that kind of stuff. For the almond grower, it's the opposite. He only needs a couple people. He needs one person in a machine called a shaker, which shakes the trees, and another person to hold the basket to catch the almonds as they fall. So he doesn't need that many people. So then his politics are less immigration, fewer people, right? Where Joe needs more people. So he is predisposed to say, bring them on.
And getting back to the economics of this all, what are experts saying about the potential long-term effects of this immigration crackdown by the Trump administration?
Well, that's sort of to be determined. We do know, again, that they're already sending up signal flares saying, you know, there's not enough people coming in to work this. The overall labor market is in a slump. One of the only reasons that it's not actively in a recession right now, this is according to the Wall Street Journal, is because net migration is way down, almost nil. So right now, that seems to be masking a sort of larger recession. And part of that is farm workers.
Nigel Duara, reporter with our news partner, Cal Matters, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was our producer, Jonathan Linden, speaking with CalMatters reporter Nigel Duara. You can read Nigel's report and other stories from across California at calmatters.org. And that is today's show. Today's episode was produced by Jonathan Linden and KVPR with support from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative. I'm Elizabeth Arkalian. Find the latest local news anytime at kvpr.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.